Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 28th of February. It is the last day of February.
Yay.
And so that makes it, this is a leap year, yes?
No, there's no 29th.
Nine,
tomorrow's
right.
March 1st.
Maybe there'll be two March 1sts, and then it could be a leap year.
It's okay.
So we're leaping over the 29th.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I guess that's what I was thinking.
Right.
All right. Good morning and welcome.
I feel so smart on this show sometimes.
Excuse me. Yeah, it's not hard, is it?
Yes, by default,
yeah,
the smartest person in the room. Well done.
Thank you. set a nice tone. Thanks. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Hi.
Also joining us is Ray Graff, our newsman. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, Joe.
And also the smartest person in the room,
right?
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us as well. And thank you very much. Later on in the program, the topics will dictate that we will go to... we're going to talk about Jeopardy, and
yeah,
our Ian Pickens will join us, and then we're going to talk about the Oscars, and Sarah Leduc will join us
cool.
later on, so we're looking forward to that. All
yeah.
right, let's get on to the news of the day. The president held a very large, I would say a major event, major media event yesterday, where the president spoke in personal terms at the White House on Thursday about how he got high as a teenager and was at times indifferent to school as he deplored what he called America's numbness to the plight of young black men. He talked about a new initiative which is being called My Brother's Keeper to help young minority men, and ultimately in this press conference shared his own story about past drug use and the problems that he had. He sought to connect his personal narrative about growing up without a father to that of a generation of black youth in the United States who said he faced higher odds of failure than their peers. I didn't have a dad in the house, Mr. Obama said, as he announced a $200 million five-year initiative, My Brother's Keeper, to help black youth. And I was angry about it, even though I didn't necessarily realize it at the time. I made bad choices. I got high without always thinking about the harm that it could do. I didn't always take school as seriously as I should have. I made excuses. Sometimes I sold myself short. And this, I thought there was an interesting story in NPR last night that was pointing out that while this is a major initiative and there's money behind this and it's 5 years, this is really something that the president has been talking about for several years and is something that he's been talking about in schools and when he goes out on the trail and speaks to young people. So it's very much in keeping with past statements that he has made. And I guess your thoughts, Alan, of this problem and how ultimately a successful initiative like this can be.
Well, I think, frankly, it's great. I think the guy gets to his roots, gets to a large segment of American population, which has been really, really at the bottom rungs, and where really speaking the truth becomes terribly important. Now, his ratings right now are not very good. His political ratings. And I would expect that since he is speaking to a specific group, and since others will say, but what about us, that they may reject it. That they may say, well, you know, I don't like it. But I frankly think it's a great thing for him to be doing, and that if he does it and he does it right and comes out doing it the way that he's doing it, people will feel very supportive, and will say, you know, we have an endangered population in this country, and something should be done about it. The way it's been done in the past isn't working. Those kids are at risk. Here's a guy who puts his neck out, and I think it's a terrific thing.
He has been reluctant. Obama's been reluctant to be too black as president. So this is an
right.
unusual move for him. While, as you say, he's talked about this, he's not put program into working with black youth before.
Right.
So this is a bold step. I think it's totally the right time considering the Trayvon Martin case and now the case in Florida where the young man who wouldn't turn down his radio for the frustrated white guy was killed. It's just a perfect timing for that. And he's also very eloquent on the topic. This is a man who has had great success turning his personal narrative into a political success. And what better than this? He was a fatherless boy. He was black in a place, America, that does not appreciate black youth. And I love the part last night when he's telling his story and he remembered one of the Chicago kids who started the whole initiative. And this kid looks at him and goes, "Is that you you're talking about?" what a better lesson than, wow, I could grow up to be president.
And that is, I think, the most the one thing that he can tell these kids that nobody else can is how you come from that background and you do turn it around. Of what right. what was that turning point? Right. What was that moment that you were able to come out of this?
He's a pretty great model for the program. You can't really doubt his word.
I was wondering how long it was going to take. I think I even mentioned this a few weeks ago on the show, and I've been eagerly awaiting it. And today, the word appeared in the New York Times, and I was so happy that finally it was here upon us. Mr. Obama's remarks come at the end of his time in office is in sight, with the president mindful of his legacy
or lame duck.
That his administration will leave behind on race and other civil rights issues like same-sex marriage and immigration. So that's not a bad thing to have a legacy for.
No, hard to see opponents to this one.
Well, there have been, of course, but
well, it's similar. Alan, you've talked about this Cuomo's plan to help, and many of them are black minorities, is also people in jail get help and then turn their life around. That's met with a lot of criticism. So you would expect the same opponents to this. Right.
Yeah, I think it's a little different, Rosemary. You know, I think that the big difference here is this is something that goes to a population at risk that is not seen in the same way, nor is anybody competing for scarce resources to do it. So an outside parent might say, I have to pay for my kids, and I can hardly afford to do that to go to SUNY or CUNY. And it's $18,000 a year, which is an incredible amount of money. And now we're going to pay for the kids in prison. No, forget it. We're not going to do that. I don't want to do that. And he gets a tremendous amount of pushback. And he knew he was going to get it. And I think that is the profile and courage here, that he did it. On the other hand, in this case, I think he's talking about something else. I think he's talking about a sociology. I think he's talking about giving hope. And that really doesn't particularly cost anybody anything. So I think it's different.
Meanwhile, Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of African and African American studies at Duke University, said the president's initiative did not focus enough on the systemic forms of racism in America. And ultimately, Neal sided with critics within the black population who have accused the president of forgetting his roots. But it seems like it's two different things of tackling the entire issue of racism and tackling a very pointed issue of young black men and the problems and the issues and the challenges they face.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Joe, within every group, there will always be somebody who says, A, I can get a little publicity for myself here by being, you know, off the charts. And I think this your professor is a pretty good example. And two, somebody who will say, okay, by doing this, I hold his feet to the fire. I make sure that he knows that there's a critical group out there who think that it's not enough. And you know what? It'll never be enough. So he does a great thing, and there's always somebody to call him names.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and go on to other stories as well. We welcome your input, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany. Offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now serving the Westfield area, RichardsFuel.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Ray Graff joining us this morning. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Weeks before a manufactured traffic jam of the George Washington Bridge overtook Fort Lee, New Jersey, at the behest of aides to Governor Chris Christie, two people central to the scheme jokingly discussed engineering traffic problems at a less prominent site, the home of a rabbi. "We cannot cause traffic problems in front of his house, can we?" wrote Bridget Ann Kelly, then a deputy chief of staff for Mr. Christie. David Wildstein, a Christie ally at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, suggested that they should think bigger. "Flights to Tel Aviv all mysteriously delayed," he wrote. Again, he did appear to be kidding. The exchange was revealed in documents supplied by Mr. Wildstein as part of the investigation by the New Jersey legislature. The exchange is dated August 19th. 6 days earlier, Ms. Kelly wrote that it was time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, in an apparent reference to the plan to close some lanes leading to the George Washington Bridge. The lanes were initially closed on September 9th, setting off wide-scale gridlock over several days, and more recently threatening the political fortunes of the governor, a Republican, amid allegations that the closings were politically motivated. Though it is still unclear as to why the two might have been upset with the particular rabbi, though the jam at the rabbi's house appears never to have happened, the documents lend new context to the highly charged environment in which Mr. Christie's aides operated, an atmosphere of political paybacks, where the planned lane closings for Fort Lee could be joked about as a weapon to be wielded against people who irked or defied them. So I guess this is just more information that we're getting out. Meanwhile, the rabbi seems to be sort of like clueless as to why all of this is happening.
Yeah, he's kind of mildly amused by it.
Yeah, we do have a few ideas as to what happened. The rabbi apparently has went on record as saying that rabbis shouldn't endorse people, but he supported them. Now, he was a big Christie supporter, and they went to Israel together, and he headed up a committee for him, and he did all of that. So with some of these guys, when they get very arrogant, some of these political staffers and the others, they start to say, well, it's not enough. We asked you to endorse him. We want the Jewish vote. You didn't do it. Now we're mad at you. And that may have been what was going on. The other thing I wanted to say is that there's a big difference, seems to me, between sarcasm in the spoken word and sarcasm in print. If you're sarcastic in print, there's literally no way to know that. You take the words the way that they appear. Whereas if you hear it, you know when somebody's being sarcastic, at least most people do. But once you had the Fort Lee closings, then, of course, you have to take it as a matter of course that they meant business.
Well, you put it in. It puts it in context. If 6 weeks before this happened, and they're joking back and forth about, well, we're going to cause a traffic delay here, we're going to cause a traffic delay there, it does give it a context that that's kind of their ammunition against those who tick them off.
Yeah, but the rabbi, when asked, "How come? How come they're after you?" he said, "I don't know. I have no idea. I've always liked the guy, and I always thought he liked me. So this is one of the problems of staff embarrassing you. Do you guys remember when Jimmy Carter was the president and one of his guys poured a drink down somebody's shirt, a woman's shirt in a bar, and it made national headlines? That's the kind of thing that they have to know that they are extensions of their principal.
And that kind of silly thing did cost Carter his future in politics. He was not voted in again. I think
that was the reason.
That was one of them. He had a whole. It added to the idea that he was incompetent and not in control. And I think this is a nightmare for Christie because now all of his email, all of the staff's
sure.
email is being perused, and there's going to be sarcastic remarks and banter, and it's going to look bad. I mean, I read this and said there's not very much, and
yeah,
it wouldn't
nothing
be
really
anything.
Happened, right?
Yeah, it would be nothing except in the context of what is being investigated. So this has to be his worst nightmare. And we predicted it that it would happen this way.
Yeah, he's done.
I think you're
stick
right.
Stick a fork in him.
When do you think he'll admit he's done?
Well, it's very hard to do that. Anthony Weiner took forever. Remember that?
Yeah.
Has he done it yet?
And other politicians keep hoping, because they do very well in the beginning, hoping for resurrection and that it'll happen. I suspect he doesn't think he's done.
When I say and, done, I mean in national context. I mean,
he just
got reelected to a governorship.
Right, so he still has a job.
Yeah, I mean, unless
there's well, you can only run twice.
Charge,
let's remember, you can only run twice in New Jersey.
Good point.
So you can only be governor for two terms. So after that, if he doesn't move up, as they say in the academy, you move out.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Don't forget the Facebook page or tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.
No, more music.
Yeah. What is that one? That's not King Crimson. It was
Schubert. Wait, no, what was
Schubert.
It?
Schubert. That's right. That's very funny. John Zorn.
Oh, nice. Of course. Yeah, good stuff. Excellent. We're back. Welcome back to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff and Rosemary Armeo. And we are talking about a wide range of issues this morning. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. All right. Let us go to the economy and about the Fed on the economy. And, you know, we're all complaining about the weather because it's very, very cold.
Yeah.
Very cold. And for those of us in the Northeast, this is a good old-fashioned Northeast winter.
Sure.
And but it's very cold. So now we can blame a lot of things on the cold. Apparently, also a poor economy.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, it's been an ice age for the last 12 years, and the glaciers are moving in because it's not been good.
So, Janet,
I don't know if anybody else has gotten their bill. We just got our natural gas bill.
Yes.
It was frightening. It was we're used to $400 or something around that area, maybe a little bit more, and this was almost $800. So it was a huge bite. And of course, if we're spending money on gas, what else are we not spending money on?
Yeah, well, and that's right, and it's also it has been cold, and it takes a lot to heat the house, no matter what source you're using. So Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve chairwoman, said on Thursday that the Fed was looking closely at a recent run of disappointing economic data as it considers how quickly to retreat from its economic stimulus campaign. Yellen said that cold weather had contributed to the slowdown, but that the Fed had not been able to determine whether the harsh winter across the eastern half of the nation was a complete explanation. I would hope not.
No. What excuse are they going to use in the summer is what I want to know.
Yeah, it feels a little weak, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does.
We got a letter yesterday from somebody who said, thanks to Ray for keeping it real.
Oh, yeah.
And it's these little pithy comments, like, what excuse are they going to use in the summer that make you so great, Ray?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I have been trying to do my part in the bad weather. I want to help out the economy. I've been buying a fur hat. I'm redoing
faux fur,
my kitchen.
Of course, right?
Yeah, fur. Yes. Fake, sure.
Fake beaver.
Fake beaver. It's not real. Yeah. No, it's not a real beaver. No. And I have
is that
been,
really the animal you had to go for?
Well, that's what it is.
From around
it's from
here.
New York State.
There was mink.
No,
mink?
No, not
this
mink.
This was the beaver
okay.
capital of the.
That's right. That's
the whole
right.
world.
Okay. We're digressing, and I'm spending on my kitchen, but I don't think that this is a convincing reason, and I think that the big coverage given this speech reflects that. She might just as well have said, we don't have a full explanation, and we're looking into that now, and left it at that, adding the weather.
Well,
I think
well
a mistake.
Why not take a gift when you're handed it, Rosemary? I mean, you know, some of the pundits are saying it's all because of the weather. She's got a big problem on her hands.
Show me how that works, Alan. How does
well,
cold
I'm
weather
about
mean?
To, I'm about to try that. So everybody's saying, she says, well, it's not entirely clear it's the weather, only the weather, we're looking into it. But she doesn't dismiss the weather, because why should she? That's an asset to her reasons that the economy isn't working for the president she's working for. And by the way, while I'm at it, she's obviously a very bright woman. But a speaker, not so much.
Well, Bernanke was hardly a great orator either, so I'm not sure
that
that's relevant.
No, that's right, but Greenspan, on the other hand, was right up there with Casey Stengel. You could listen to him real carefully, but you had no idea what he was talking about.
Not a clue.
Well, and I would vote for an actual economist rather than somebody could wrangle with the politicians, because Greenspan did not help the economy or our handling of it. That's why one reason we're in this mess. I don't know. I think that I don't get how weather would have an impact. Yes, you're not going out to the mall, but you're spending money, as you say, Alan, on energy costs. Those go into the economy. You're spending money on warmer clothes, as I am. You're going online and buying stuff. How does cold weather dump your economy? Oh, I'm too cold to hire anybody today? I don't get it.
Isn't part that they're spending tens of billions every month buying back or buying
bonds? They're tapering that off.
Yeah, well, by $10 billion, but it's still something, what, in the order of $50 billion a month? Eventually, that's going to hurt.
Cold weather. My question was,
we'll
how does cold
more
weather?
More fiat currency will be fine. That's great.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about there's a villain on Jeopardy, and we're going to talk about the Jeopardy villain with our Jeopardy expert Ian Pickus, and then we'll talk about the Oscars with our film maven Sarah LeDuc. So we'll do that. We're going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Bard Graduate Program in Sustainability, offering Master of Science degrees in Environmental Policy and Climate Science and Policy, and an MBA in Sustainability. Open house March 8th at Bard College, bard.edu/CEP. Casual set, Stuyvesant Plaza, featuring modern women's fashions and accessories, serving the Capital Region for over 40 years, 518-482-7136. And Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion for this Friday morning. And I found this to be a fascinating story. It actually, because of there's been some Jeopardy tournaments and so forth, it hasn't been an ongoing story. It's been kind of spits and spurts. But when this man started to win, it became an issue. And then when he came back after the tournaments and he's winning again, it has flared up again. And I just find it fascinating. He's now been dubbed the Jeopardy villain. And his name is Arthur Chu. And fans of the show, it seems even to have irked Alex Trebek a great deal by this man's unconventional style. He basically, what he does, and Ian Pickus is with us, so he can sort of tell you what he does different in the game. But it's what is being called a Moneyball style of playing the game, which he's just basically ruthless.
It's weird because I think a lot of people were taken surprised by some of the game strategy that existed for already 30 years when this guy started doing it. This guy named Chuck Forrest literally wrote the book on this style of gameplay in like 1984, after winning a bunch of games and searching out clues, going out of order, and trying to maximize what can be a very lucky experience into a manageable type of gameplay. And this Arthur Chu fellow, who has now, I think, won 8 games and, you know, is in the 6 figures, is basically building on a strategy that existed for a long time. And I would just say, speaking from experience, there's no trick to winning on Jeopardy. It is, if you find something that works for you, that's great, and it's hard to win, and this guy has found a system that works. But whatever that system is, you have to be really, really good to win 8 games in a row.
You still have to have the right answers.
Yeah.
But interestingly,
there's another way to look at this, Ian. You know, in Las Vegas, am I wrong about this? Because I've never seen Jeopardy, but in Las Vegas, the guys who are counting the cards got kicked out.
I'm sorry. You've never seen Jeopardy?
Never.
You have never seen? The show's been on since like 1952. You've never seen Jeopardy?
I try not to watch that stuff.
It cuts into his Rifleman time.
That stuff?
Right. I like good shows like The Rifleman or Wanted Dead or Alive with Steve McQueen.
Wow.
So I don't watch.
Okay,
Jeopardy.
So count card.
No,
is he allowed to ask questions
me.
Then?
It is what it is. But as the governor would say. But I'm interested in what Ian says about, could they change the rules? Like they started throwing people out of the casinos who are counting cards. Ray, you know about that too, right?
Right, you are. I do a soft count. So you just look for the number of high cards that are sort of flowing in, and you do a soft count. Better question for you, Ian, is don't you think...
What better question?
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I find interesting about his strategy. He plays to tie sometimes so he can see a lesser opponent the next day. You can't really legislate that out of the game. That's just brilliant strategy.
It's funny you should say that because his first game, friend of a friend was the person who tied with him in that first game. And,
really?
And everyone said at the time, well, he made a mistake in wagering because you normally wouldn't play for a tie and try to play the same person the next day in a row. But it turns out this guy was onto something much bigger. I don't think he's doing anything technically illegal from what I understand here, but his style is really unconventional. And let's face it, people like the show because it's been exactly the same since Uncle Art Fleming.
But as Alan mentions about card counting, that's technically not illegal either. But the casino says, hey, wait a minute, that gives you a huge edge. You got to go if we catch you.
But still, again, he knows the answers to the questions. I mean, you can play all you want, but people get mad at him because he smacks the buzzer. He has sort of this palm approach where he's smacking the buzzer, and so he gets in. And then, so you have to do that. I mean, there's the whole thing on, you know this all too well, Ian, about the buzzer. And then there's also, once you get there, okay, you have to get the question right. But I'm curious as to why he's being seen as a villain, because he doesn't take a category and go 100, 200, 300, 400, 500.
Why should you if you don't have to?
And instead searching for the daily doubles. And then also when he hits a daily double, just say, okay, I'm only going to bet $5. And then as Alex is reading the question, he goes, all right, I'm done. I don't know. And Alex says, what? He said, I don't know. Move. Go. Yeah. Move on.
And he is really just building on something that's existed for a while, there's always been a level of gamesmanship, and the better players have realized it. If you get that little warning, you know, we have less than a minute remaining, all of a sudden the person who's leading starts to read a little slower and take their time, yeah. or they go out of order because they know their $1,600 clue might have a daily double under it. They tell you, as you're getting ready to go on, you can play any way you like. You don't have to go in any kind of order. You can bet $5 on a daily double. He's not breaking any rules here. I think people are a little alarmed because of the fact that he has seemed to win eight games by exposing a flaw or something. I don't think that's true. He has gone out there and known eight games worth of content.
Yeah.
I think he's annoying because he's a minority. And if he were a pretty blonde or a cute young American preppy boy, it wouldn't be causing nearly the stink.
Oh, I disagree.
He actually said, he echoed Rosemary in an interview on Weekend Edition. He said, you know, I think it's the I'm an Asian guy and people have a stereotype about me, and that might be adding into some of the Twitter hate.
I don't know, because there are plenty of those Ivy League guys have been on there that I've just hated with passion. Yeah. I don't know. I can't.
But we're spending an enormous amount of time on this, which is fine. I have no problem with it because everybody apparently watches it. But think about this. This is great for Trebek. It's great for the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably great for the guy. You know, everybody can hate him, but at the same time, we're talking about it. People say, well, maybe I ought to tune in and take a look at that. And my bet is that their ratings are higher than ever right now.
With this guy getting so much publicity, Ian, do you think that this will lead to a more aggressive strategy being much more common on the program in the future?
I think it already has because this guy a few years ago named Roger Craig, who was actually involved in the testing of that Watson system with RPI and everything, he took a very similar approach, not necessarily in game style, but in putting out a kind of computer programming approach to what he knew and didn't know and how he would play, and he won, you know, a million games in the tournament and so on. And I think this guy, Arthur Chu, has modeled his approach to the game based on Roger Craig. So yes, and I think Alan is also right that the ratings are going to be through the roof because people want to see this guy crash and burn.
Yeah. Well, and about crashing and burning and sort of what Ray, because Ray's looking at the long range here of future players. And I just want to, you know, obviously these things are taped in bulk, so they'll tape several shows at one time. So this is the guy's eighth game, so he may have only been there for two or three days, and other contestants who are going to play him may or may not be watching him or sort of understand all of what we're seeing. This has been already done and in the can, right?
Yeah.
So how ostracized are those players who play that? Like if he's, will they have seen his first or second game? Probably not.
Well, if they're on the same taping day, they've seen him, you know, but it's five shows in one day. So now he's on to his eighth win. The second batch of people probably have no idea until they walk in that day with their suit on a hanger, and they say, "Oh, this guy's won eight games already," which no one wants to hear that.
No,
well, you're our last great hope, Ian. When you went on, we were all supportive. Are you upset that you didn't, you know, sort of figure all this out?
It's funny because I think my dad and I kind of looked at each other and said that the immortal line from Gypsy, you know, if I would have been, I could have been, and that's show business.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. And Ian, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
When we come back, we'll do a quick Oscar roundup and get ready for Sunday night in Hollywood as the film's big night takes place.
Arthur Chu up for best actor.
That's right. Absolutely. And best grunting. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view. Exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health, located in the Berkshires, dedicated to creating an awakened, compassionate, and connected world through the wisdom and practice of yoga, kripalu.org. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space, with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. And joining us in the studio is Sarah LaDuke, the producer of this very program. And it is a delight to have her here and on
mic. We have no choice, really. She's the producer.
Yeah. That's right. She is.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally in charge. Nope. Good morning.
Good morning. It is a it's a delight to have you here. It is safe to say that that you are a regular movie goer and a keen observer of the industry.
I try to be. I like films and flicks even.
Flicks, films, all the good stuff. So
that's
we
right.
have. We have 9 films up for the Academy Award, and so we'll just go around the room and see. I think you've seen quite a few of these, Alan, haven't you?
I saw many of them because Roselle makes me go, but I have to say I haven't seen some of the more difficult ones because, as Ray has pointed out, I'm a fan of The Rifleman. I like things with good endings.
Yes, so, I'm with you.
So I don't see films that are particularly challenging. I don't like to feel sad.
All right. Well, there's a lot of sad films here, but we have American Hustle, Captain Phillips.
Yeah, which I loved.
Yeah. Captain Phillips.
Loved it.
Dallas Buyers Club.
Didn't see it.
Gravity.
Didn't
great.
See it.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm. Her.
Saw it.
Nebraska.
Saw it.
Philomena.
Saw it.
Okay. 12 Years a Slave.
Didn't see it.
And The Wolf of Wall Street. So
saw it.
It seems as though, if you correct me if I'm wrong here, sir, but it seems that conventional wisdom is that it's a race between Gravity and 12 Years a Slave.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying those two films will split director and film one way or
that's
the other.
That's what Robin Audrey said exactly that yesterday.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and Thelma Adams said the same thing on Tuesday.
So we have nothing new to add.
Well, no, I think
it's
interesting because Gravity will be good. Because usually if the person, the what wins best film, not usually, but often.
Often wins best director.
Yes, and those two go hand in hand. So you have 12 Years a Slave, which is the Solomon Northup story, and
right.
then you
directed
have...
Directed by Steve McQueen.
Who is amazing.
He is very...
And the film is amazing. It's a really well-done film. Mm-hmm. Incredible cast. I had some issues with it, but it's good. It's a good movie. And then Gravity, which I actually didn't like as much, although I can understand...
It's a cinematic feat.
It is.
I mean, it's innovative and new and compelling. It's one of those movies that's really everybody was recommending as soon as it came out that you see it at the cinema because it's so grand.
So big in 3D and the whole nine yards. Is there one category in particular that you really are looking forward to?
This is what I would like. I do have a way outside possibility hope that there will be... In the 86-year history of the Academy Awards, there have been 6 ties. Mm. I would love for there to be a 7th tie this year and for Matthew McConaughey and Chiwetel Ejiofor to both win Best Actor for Dallas Buyers Club and 12 Years a Slave, respectively.
Mm. When was the last time there was a tie?
Last year, actually, for sound editing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
of course.
How about ties in the major categories?
There's been 2... acting ties, the biggest one probably in 1968, Katharine Hepburn and Barbara Streisand tied for their work in The Lion in Winter and Funny Girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, that's a good tie.
But I want there to be a new one.
No,
that
I
decided in this studio.
And pick those two people.
Yeah.
which I have nothing wrong. I like that.
You don't disagree. Yeah.
I don't disagree with that.
It's
I like
very
that.
Unlikely. It's very unlikely. And the voting, I cannot... understand how exactly it all works and plays out. The numbers are bizarre.
Yeah.
So I don't know how unlikely or possible a tie even is.
Does Iron Man 3 have a chance for Best Picture this year?
It was not nominated.
Darn it.
And might have come out last year.
Yeah, no, it's in there. It's got to be in there.
Yeah.
It might have some technical. I don't know.
No, it wasn't. No. You know what? You know what movie actually has an Academy Award nomination for a technical award? And Alan, this will shock you, because I think you're probably the only one in the room who saw this, but for Best Makeup and Hairstyling, The Lone Ranger is up for an award.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it got so panned, and I loved it, but it got really panned.
Oh, I didn't think you liked it.
What'd you say?
I didn't think you liked it.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. I didn't like it.
Yeah. He's thinking of Clayton Moore, and it goes back
a ways. I remember why I didn't like it, because they made fun of the Lone Ranger.
Right, and it's also up for
my
the
hero.
Best visual effects, yeah. Oh, Ray!
What?
Iron Man 3 up for best visual effects.
That's
see,
what I said.
You see, but it's not best picture, and clearly it was the best picture of the year.
I have another category I care about a bit. I know we don't have time. My eyes are on the clock.
No, that's it. They always are.
What a producer.
Best song, Let It Go from the Disney animated film Frozen is nominated for Best Song. Yeah. Idina Menzel is going to sing it at the Oscars. She's a Broadway lady. I'm psyched about that. But also, if that song wins, the composer, Robert Lopez of Avenue Q, The Book of Mormon, and the musical episode of Scrubs will be the 12th person in the industry to be an EGOT-er, to have an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
Wow.
Oh, so and we're hoping for that.
He's pretty likely to win. Not, I mean, it's, you know.
You never know.
It would be cool.
Well, I mostly care about Ellen DeGeneres. I like the host. That's makes
love
a big
the
deal.
Host. Yeah. Certainly better than what
oh
we've
my
had
God.
Over the last
the
couple
last
of years.
The last 2 years have been ridiculous.
We'll see what happens Sunday night, and we'll talk about it Monday, and much, much more. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it for our extended panel this morning. That's very nice. Alan, have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you, Joe, and I hope that Ray will have Rosemary on next year to psych us out about the Oscars. She's terrific.
Oh, well, will do, Chief.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.